Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. I'm Maddie, and you are listening to an episode in our podcast series, Oh, the Places You Will Go, an SLP Spotlight, where I get to interview speech pathologists who have interesting positions in our field, from the very basic to the most interesting spots, places, people they work with, and all of that in between. I get to have the fun of just chatting with these SLPs, finding out what they do, how they got their jobs, and any words of advice they have for other SLPs. So listen as we explore all the wonderful things an SLP can do. Today, I am with Selena Wright, who is a highly anticipated guest. She is an SLPA, and I've had a lot of people ask for her to come on. So welcome, Selena.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So tell us just a little bit about yourself.
So I live in Southern California, and I live here with my husband and our three boys, and, you know, have a busy family life. And I'm also very privileged and, you know, grateful to be a licensed and practicing SLPA. I work in a private clinic setting, and this July, actually, I celebrated 11 years there at that clinic. And prior to working as an SLPA, I worked in, you know, a related field. I worked as an early intervention specialist. In California, we have regional centers, and those are facilities that provide services to individuals with disabilities from birth through adulthood. And so their area of early intervention provides services to the birth to three population. So I worked there, for a vendor company who worked with Regional Center for several years. I also worked as an ABA therapist while going through some of my college coursework. And then found the journey. I always found myself going back to the speech pathology side of things. In working in those two areas, there was often, most times, a focus on speech and language, among other areas of development. And that was the area I was most passionate to lesson plan for and find out more information on. And one thing led to another, and my paths crossed with an SLP who worked at the early intervention company, who asked me if I had ever heard of the licensure of SLPA. And at that time, I hadn't. So she encouraged me to look into it, knew that I was interested in the field. And one thing led to another, and I looked into, in California, there are a couple different ways now that you can achieve an SLPA licensure. And so at the time, I went to a dedicated SLPA program, Pasadena City College here in Southern California. And it has a rich history of being a trailblazer in the SLPA licensure. And so I attended that program, became licensed. So I finished coursework and a practicum in the field. I was fortunate that my practicum offered me some diversity. So I worked in a school setting, and then I also worked in a hospital setting. The area specifically in the hospital that I worked in was outpatient rehab and transitional living. And then after my practicum, I submitted, you know, both of those pieces, the education and the fieldwork piece, to our state licensing board and was, you know, provided an SLPA licensure. And then after that, shortly after I was licensed, I interviewed at the private clinic that I'm actually currently still working at. And here we are today.
11 years later.
Yes, 11 years later. It's flown by, but then there's been so much that has happened in that time span too. So it's wonderful.
Wonderful story. Wonderful story. I have a list of literally, I don't think we'll make our way through them, like 15 questions.
Wow.
The listeners have shared that they would like me to ask you.
Wonderful.
So first one, how does one become a speech language pathology assistant? Like, what degrees do you need? Schools? How hard is it? Licensure, certifications, skills, knowledge? things like that.
Sure. So this is a question that, you know, in coming years has really moved to standardize. So up until this point, each state kind of recognized SLPAs in a slightly different way. And in some states, there was overlap. So speaking from a California perspective where I live, you had to attend an SLPA dedicated program. That was the only way to achieve the education requirements. And then you would complete a field work, practicum position. So very similar to the story that I went into detail about right now. And over time, that shifted, and four-year universities were having their students go back to their programs and saying, you know, I would like to achieve an SLPA license, but it's difficult for me. You know, I just finished this four-year degree, and then I now would have to go back to a community college and do extra coursework and then still a practicum. And so over time, the transition happened where there were now both opportunities for achieving education as an SLPA. So you could still continue to do the dedicated two-year program. Or in some cases, certain universities in California would offer at the back end of their four-year degree some extra courses in clinical skills and then also the fieldwork component. And then you would submit that to the state licensing board. In other states, it looks different, even to this day. And I can't speak to exact requirements in every state. So I would encourage a listener to look into their specific state with their licensing board if they wanted specifics. But I've heard of situations where it's everything from no field work. So you just have to have a four-year degree in communicative disorders or, you know, anything from even just professional development hours, submitting that to a state board. So in California, we set the standard pretty high. You know, you have to complete a fair amount of education in the field. And then you also have to complete a significant practicum because you're preparing. The difference between preparing to be an SLPA versus an SLP after the four-year degree is an SLP, you know, if you're just focused on the four-year degree launching you into grad school, getting prepared for graduate school, whereas an SLPA, you have to become ready to treat, you know, clinical areas of focus. So that's where the divergence happens. If you didn't, you know, pursue SLPA after your 4 year and wanted to go to grad school, you would, you know, have a different set of focuses versus needing to be prepared clinically speaking for those skills. The fortunate thing now is for years, it depended on each state association and how they incorporated and advocated and represented SLPAs. And that was really the only representation we had on a larger scale. It's fortunate for us now that through advocacy and representation, ASHA is now coming up and they've developed an associate program that would cover and certify the SLPA license. That does a lot of wonderful things. It unifies states in terms of requirements to become an SLPA. So that's really fortunate for people across the country, especially for SLPAs who eventually want to relocate and, you know, maybe born and raised in a certain state, but then eventually want to move to another state and they're concerned if their license is, you know, transferable. So it does that. It also sets a standard nationwide so that employers and large funding sources like Medicare, you know, have an understanding of the base education and experience that an SLPA would have. And so it, you know, hopefully will open more employment opportunities and then also standardizing wages at that point. If things are standardized across the board nationwide, then you'd likely see a more standard wage compensation.
Sounds like it adds a lot more stability to your career.
Yes, yes. And there are SLPAs who are interested in, because primarily SLPAs work in school settings and private clinics. And I've met a couple of colleagues who work in more of a medical setting, but even when they're working in a medical setting, they're used in a very specific way. And it tends not, you know, our license and scope of practice is definitely different than that of an SLP. And I'm sure we'll probably get into that in a little bit. But it still would open more opportunities for SLPAs to work in broader settings and in more settings nationwide.
Wonderful. What are the employment opportunities for an SLPA?
So currently, SLPAs are afforded employment in schools, school settings, and that can look like a, you know, traditional K-12 public school or a charter school. I've not really come across SLPAs who are utilized in a private school setting. And then aside from schools, private clinics often employ SLPAs, and that can look many different, you know, like different in those settings, because depending on the population that that clinic services, which is probably primarily pediatric. I know that that's the case for our clinic. So private clinics and schools generally are the two larger employers you will see SLPs working with.
How's the job market for an SLPA?
Pretty good. In California, when I first started, the need for SLPs was pretty significant. And it varied a little bit. We're such a large state that we're often referred to as Northern and Southern California. And in my experience years ago, there were more job opportunities typically in Southern California than in Northern. But I've seen that shift happen over the years, and I see a lot of job opportunities posted in both sectors of our state. In terms of other states, it really just goes back to SLPAs, are those a recognized licensure? And if they are, you're probably looking at pretty good job opportunities. You know, obviously, if they're not, you're not going to see jobs in those states. I will say the market has become more competitive in recent years because of budgetary reasons and things like that in different employment settings, and at the rate that programs are graduating SLPAs. And now you have prospective SLPs who have taken this, you know, divergence in some cases to SLPA. It's not a flooded job market, but it's definitely more saturated than it was years ago. And so prospects still look good, but, you know, you do have to stand out. And I think that the ASHA certification will add something. And if you're also a part of your state association, that adds a bit of an edge to your resume than maybe your colleague.
So is the ASHA certification required for SLPAs now?
No. No,
okay,
it's not.
It's something that if you really want to be an SLPA and stand out, you would go after the ASHA certification.
Correct. And they would be differentiated by a C in front of the SLPA letters after your name. And so you'd see that an individual went above and beyond and went through. You have to submit some, you know, information about your education. There are courses that ASHA requires in ethics and procedural safeguards and those sorts of things. And then you also submit your experience as an SLPA, and all of that's looked at, and then a certificate is awarded by ASHA. Mm-hmm.
So it could be your first of three C's if you decide to
could
go
be.
On to your C's later on.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
So as a graduate professor, I know that the academic setting has changed with COVID. There are students who are, you know, and I'm tapped into nationwide. I'm not just talking about my university. Nationwide, there are a lot of students who are selecting this as a gap year and maybe some be going into the SLPA realm.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of prospective graduate students want to become an SLPA to gain experience and also give their resume an edge. And give them more perspective into the field so that they're prepared for graduate school. especially those who would want to work in the settings that currently SLPs are employed in. So if they want to work in that setting as an SLP, then becoming an SLP and gaining experience mm-hmm. and skills in that area is really beneficial. I also wanted to mention regarding the education requirements. It used to be that years ago, at least in the state of California, that an individual could have a bachelor's degree in a related field. So maybe psychology or linguistics or something like that. And then could do a post-bac program and do basically leveling courses. And as part of the post-bac program, oftentimes there were classes addressing SLPA, and then they would just have to submit also their fieldwork experience, and then they could receive their license. That since has ceased. And so that's no longer an option, at least in the state of California, for one to achieve their SLPA license. So you have to have a four-year degree in COMD in order to apply for the license.
Helpful information to know. I'm sure some people will key into that answer right there as they make their decisions. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the income as an SLPA and job security.
So the income can vary. I'm part of a page and now a podcast called SLPA.resources. You can find us on Instagram, and our website will actually be launching August 1st. So that will have even more wonderful resources. And there's a specific resource on there where the creator of the resource has really broken down this information. And you can see the variability. This information particularly is in reference to California, but the range can be anywhere from, I've heard, as low as $18 an hour to some agencies upwards of like $40 to $42 an hour. And like with anything else, the range exists because of the setting and the funding source that particular employer is, you know, gets its stream from, to experience of the SLPA, knowledge and skill set. So all of those things play a role in determining what I'm sure someone's end salary would be. I've also heard of variability in terms of benefits. So some jobs offer salaried positions, and then most of them, though, work off of an hourly rate. So you're compensated for the clinical hour that you provide. And hopefully, in most settings, you're also getting compensated for prep work that you're doing, you know, because we know that there's caseload and workload, and those things are different. And while SLPs don't carry a caseload, ultimately that caseload belongs to the supervising SLP, but there is a workload associated with the clients whom we treat. There's preparation for the sessions and, you know, clinical documentation and things like that. And so while that's not a direct client treatment hour, SLPs should definitely be looking for positions that still compensate them. There might be a difference, like, so you might have a clinical treatment rate that you bill when you see clients, and then you might have a base rate of compensation that you receive when you do more workload tasks. But either way, you know, you should definitely be getting compensated because you're working and you're using your skill set, you know, for those tasks. I've heard of employers not compensating for some of those workload tasks and only compensating for client treatment hours, which is problematic in my opinion, because again, an SLPA is working in and only able to work in that capacity because of their training and skill level. And then benefits can range too, depending if, you know, your employer offers, but most offer medical, dental, vision, 401k plans. Those often come with positions. If you're working for an agency that contracts with either a private clinic or a school setting, the variability there, I think, is greater. And hopefully you find a clinic who offers those benefits as well as what you would get in salary. Other things in terms of stability, that I would say, you know, would vary. If you're a direct hire to a school district or a direct hire to a private clinic, you know, as long as the health of that organization is stable. So it's interesting that we're talking about it at this time because of COVID, you know, and in California, we're really looking at the budget. Our state association is doing a lot of advocacy on the part of budgetary concerns with the governor's office, because we hope not to be in a position where budget cuts to K-12 education is, you know, really impacting the stability of jobs for not only SLPAs, but SLPs as well. But that aside, you know, setting aside situations very unique as COVID has been, I would say stability would be pretty strong. If you're working for an agency, that might be a little bit different because you're working on contracted time periods. So an agency might receive a request from a school district to cover a maternity leave, let's say. And so your position through that agency is only covering that contracted time frame. And it's the job of the agency then to find you continual contracts to then fulfill. But that works for some people. You know, the flexibility sometimes that an agency offers, or, you know, probably a number of other benefits suits them at that time in their lifestyle. Other people, you know, I also think of benefits in terms of, you know, non-salaried benefits, if, you know, categorize them like that. So if you work in a school setting, maybe you prioritize and value time off, maybe for your family life or situation. And so you would have a school schedule. So you would get major holidays off and summers, things like that. The compensation for those varies. I've heard of some individuals spreading out their income over a 12-month period so that they're getting consistent paychecks over the year. And then others don't. And so again, personal preference and what your district would offer. In the private clinic setting, it would be different. So you work, you know, when the business is open and take whatever holidays off that the business takes off. And again, one's not better or worse. They're just different depending on what you're looking for. I'm sure it's really no different than SLPs who make that decision of, do I work in a hospital clinic or do I work in a school? And those sorts of things. So the similar considerations SLPs would be making.
Would you walk us through a day, a typical day of an SLPA?
Sure. So I'll walk you through the day of a clinic SLPA, since that's what I have the most experience with myself. I did do some field work hours, and part of my practicum was completed in a school, but that was many years ago. So a typical day of an SLPA would be, you know, arriving to work and preparing in some form for the clients whom you're serving. Hopefully you have a consistent schedule, meaning you see the same students or clients that day. That's going to be really beneficial because you can anticipate better and plan, in my opinion, better for the clients. And you can track over time also probably more consistently. But a certain clinic might have rotating client hours, and so you're not necessarily seeing the same clients from day to day or week to week, and that would just be different too. So you would arrive to work, prepare for your day, and depending on the experience level of the SLPA, that might look a little bit different. So if you have questions that arise in preparing, you know, you would need to set those aside and make time to address them with your supervising SLP. But if it's an area that you're trained in, that you're competent in, and really don't need extra training, you would just, you know, continue to prepare. And then you would have service delivery hours where clients would arrive and you would greet them and then bring them to the therapy space, conduct therapy that would be based off of the treatment plan that is written by an SLP. At the clinic, the treatment plans are either written by employees, SLPs of our clinic, or the medical vendor who assessed the client. Sometimes our treatment plans are coming from those facilities. Either way, you would base your treatment off of those goals and objectives. So you would conduct treatment, you would document client progress through a clinical SOAP note, or daily note, and then in the case of a private clinic, you know, someone is bringing that minor to the clinic, likely a parent you know, in some cases a caregiver. And so there has to be a handoff of that individual back to that parent or caregiver. And so there's likely going to be a short interaction there between the SLPA and the parent. And this is where understanding the scope of practice for an SLPA is crucial, because as part of our scope, we are not to be diagnostic or prognostic in nature. And so it would be completely fine to objectively review the session, review what activities that you covered with the child, more or less behavioral responses, how was their attention and focus that day. But the moment that the subject matter would start to diverge into, well, what does that mean for so-and-so's long-term progress? What does that mean for long-term meeting the goal that we're working on? That's where the clinical judgment and discernment of an SLPA has to kick in. And hopefully they've had really good training and understand ethics and all of that to put a pause on that. And there's a number of ways you can say it, but essentially you're deferring that information to your supervising SLP. And that's an important distinction to really understand, is the difference between the scopes. And to also know that SLPAs, the licensure was designed to be independent, meaning different than in California, there used to be a speech aid classification, and that required 100% supervision. That, at the end of the day, just wasn't practical for most supervising clinicians, because the reason you would have an assistant is to perform part of the workload that you needed done so that you could focus on other things, IEPs if you're in the schools, or clinical assessments and report writing and all of that. So knowing that you're independent as an SLPA is both empowering, but at the same time, a big responsibility, because you have to know what subjects that you can speak at length to, and then what areas you have to ultimately defer. So back to ending the session, you would end the session with that objective information, take, you know, any information and set it aside that you need to address with the SLP, and then follow through and do that. You know, make time to either schedule a supervisory conference or send an email, make a phone call to get that information and put that on your SLP's radar. And then there's, you know, tasks that I'm sure all of us, you know, have to deal with in our positions of cleanliness and tidying up the area and preparing them for the next client. And that is generally a day of what an SLPA looks like. Now, there are likely other tasks throughout the week that you're also completing, maybe equipment checks. Some SLPAs handle scheduling in their environment. Some have a scheduling department that deal with that. And then also scheduling supervisory conferences would be vital, making sure that you're either meeting supervision through indirect or direct means. Direct means means live feedback with the supervisor. In this time of COVID, telesupervision is meeting the needs for direct supervision, but you would need to make sure that it's live video conferencing that you're engaging in. And then indirect would be a number of things that there's a delay in feedback. So an email, leaving a voicemail and hearing back, and that notes back and forth, that sort of thing. And then you're also, you know, collaborating with the SLP throughout the week. And that can look different depending on the setting that you're in. So you might be sitting in on one of the SLP session with that student in order to view their practices and intervention to make sure that you're lock and step with that service delivery. Sometimes they're coming in and observing your treatment and giving you feedback on the things that, you know, need to be noticed or carried on and so forth. And then in the school setting, I, you know, would imagine that from what I've heard from colleagues, similar to there's a preparation period for your day. There's a carrying out of treatment tasks during the day. And there is, to be honest, a lot of variability. So some SLPAs are traveling more so in a school setting. So they're, you know, maybe in one particular day, they're visiting multiple school sites, or maybe they're stationary for certain parts of the week in at a school and then travel to a different school other parts of the week. So there could be travel involved there. You could be doing in-home services And so traveling home to home, delivering these interventions for the consumer. So that can look different, but if talking about a stationary position, what I just reviewed would be the day.
How long should I be an SLPA before applying to grad school?
That's a great question. And I think ultimately it comes down to personal situations. Some do it for, you know, just a short period of time before applying, some longer. Many people have asked me over the years, you know, are you interested in graduate school? Is that something you'd like to pursue? And, you know, I've vacillated back and forth with my response to that. Being what our family life is right now, I think we're entering this new season where that potentially, you know, time can be afforded to that. So maybe at some point in the future, I'll apply to graduate school. And I've been doing this now 11 years. And so there might be a larger time span. And I've just interviewed, I co-host the SLPA resources that I mentioned before. I host a podcast on that as well. And I just interviewed a wonderful SLPA with wonderful experience and very knowledgeable. And she, 10 years, has been in the field and applied to graduate school 6 different times. And it just wasn't her time. And she shared in an interview that she applied for graduate school very shortly after completing her 4-year degree. And she expressed that there wasn't really a sense of self at that point. Like, she didn't know why she was applying. She thought, well, all of my cohort is applying, so I should apply, but didn't really know where in the field she wanted to go. And so becoming an SLP really helped clarify that for her and give her an understanding of self as a professional and what she wanted out of becoming an SLP. And she didn't give up, and she went back and enhanced her resume and education and did all of the extra things. And I'm very, you know, happy to hear that now she's in a graduate program and thriving there. So it can look different. I think you would just need to assess, why do you want to become an SLP? What setting do you want to work in? What are the programs that you're applying to, and what are their requirements? You'd also have to be self-aware about what type of graduate program you'd want to apply to. Distance learning programs, you know, are gaining, you know, popularity, and a lot of people are interested in those, but you have to have a lot of self-awareness of, is my learning style conducive to that format? And because it requires a lot of self-discipline and self-accountability and all of that. And not all graduate programs are, you know, the same. So you would need to look at what the requirements are there. Can you still potentially work for part of the time as an SLPA, or is your program requiring you don't work at all because of the intensiveness of the program? All of those things are things to consider. So I know that that doesn't directly answer the question, and it really comes down to individual preference and circumstances. So I would encourage someone to really draw out pro and con lists, you know, come up with, what are the pros and cons for me? And then what am I looking at in terms of programs for graduate school? And then it's like a puzzle piece, and you have to find where those lists converge, and that hopefully will lead you closer to an answer for yourself.
Good answer. I hear you saying that SLPA has been a wonderful career for you, and you really don't have a desire to move on to SLP, becoming an SLP.
You know, I do. I want to convey that. I am interested in becoming an SLP. For me, the reasons are a little bit different. I think one thing I haven't mentioned yet in the episode is one of my positions. I mean, I'm obviously an SLPA at the private clinic that I work at. And then a second position I hold is as SLPA training coordinator. And so in that position, I'm in charge of onboarding incoming SLPAs to the clinic. And I work very collaboratively with the supervising SLPs because, again, I understand there are certain areas where I'm going to have to punt, you know, subjects and topics over to their supervisor, and that's totally understandable. But to kind of serve as a gap filler for procedural tasks, training on those, and just kind of the how-to, more or less the lay of the land of the clinic, those sorts of things, my position comes in. And through that position, I've really found a joy and fulfillment in training and education. And for me, I would love to influence a future generation of professionals, and becoming an SLP, I think, would afford me that opportunity different. Again, I have influence as an SLPA, and I've been very heavily involved with our state organization, and currently am serving as the CASHA SLPA representative to the state board. And so there's networking and advocacy opportunities all over the place for SLPAs. So I get fulfillment there, but I see myself, you know, doing other things in terms of training and education. And I have a passion for certain areas of the field too, and just clinical treatment areas. And I have all these ideas and, you know, would love maybe a different platform at some point in the future to share those. So for me, yes, I'd be interested. But the wonderful thing about being an SLPA is I'm completely fulfilled also in this position that I currently am in. So I'm not frustrated in my place in life at this point. I think that other careers can be different, where you're on a trajectory to an end goal, and when you find yourself at a holding place, you can become very frustrated. This isn't what I want to do. I'm not getting paid what I'm worth. I, you know, the list can go on and on. For me, that's not my experience. I'm working in the field that I'm passionate about currently. I'm collaborating with colleagues, SLPAs and SLPs. I'm training and educating to a certain degree other professionals. I'm involved in an association that sees us and represents us as a whole. So all of those things I'm getting fulfillment in. And the counterpart is I'm being compensated a very fair wage and, you know, making a wonderful living as an SLPA also. So for me, it would be more personal preference, some larger aspirations that I have for myself. But I say this to people very frequently. If I was told tomorrow or even today, you know, graduate school will not be an option afforded to you, and you will be working as an SLPA for the rest of your career, I would be completely fulfilled in that position. But I think, because, you know, in person, there's goals and aspirations you have for yourself. And so if you have further things that you want to do and becoming an SLP helps you achieve those, more power to you. Absolutely.
Is there much burnout in the SLPA field?
Speaking from my own experience, I would say, you know, and I don't mean to say this to, you know, sound facetious or anything, but we get to do the fun part of this job. You know, we get to do mostly, we're treating. And so we're not writing these lengthy assessment reports and sitting in these, you know, hot topic IEPs and things like that. And so we get to plan the treatment and engage with the student or the client. I've heard colleagues, SLP colleagues, tell me, you know, I want to be an SLPA when I grow up, because there comes a point in their jobs where there is a burnout level because of a variety of factors. Mm-hmm. And so I would say there's much less in the SLPA arena because of that, because we get to do the treatment contact part of it.
Wonderful answer. I was not expecting that answer, but I love it when I am done with an evaluation. And then I just get to play with the kids, and, just skilled play with the kids. But I love that.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think if there is any burnout, it might be more rooted in disgruntlement, maybe with the way an employment opportunity is set up. So maybe someone's frustrated with the compensation structure or the benefit structure or lack thereof, or more and so in those areas. And I encourage those individuals to really become part of a network and gain skills to advocate for themselves, and then also part of a larger network to advocate on a larger scale. Mm-hmm. Because I'm a firm believer in venting professionally. I totally understand and I empathize with that perspective. But at the end of the day, you know, go and seek out the change that you need and find stakeholders to partner with in order to achieve that?
Technical question. Does the minimum of 100 clock hours of fieldwork include observation hours, and will those hours count towards the SLP requirements?
No, the observation hours are done early on, the 25 observation hours done early on in the training program, and then the clinical hours for the practicum are separate. And if you're thinking of becoming an SLPA, just like an SLP perspective, you know, a grad student is tasked with really scrutinizing and looking at programs, I advise prospective SLPAs to do the same with training programs. Look and ask all of this, especially if you're thinking of completing an SLPA pathway through a distance learning program. Mm-hmm. I would really scrutinize, what does the practicum field work look like? Do I get assistance from administration and professors in locating those opportunities? Do you have contracts with local clinics and schools in the area? Speaking many years ago to my experience with fieldwork, our director was very adamant that we get a variety of opportunities in our fieldwork, which is why she would, for part of the portion, put us in more of a school setting, and then the other part, maybe more of a private clinic or medical setting adjacent. So I was fortunate because I got both of those experiences, and it really helped me to make the decision of what area of the field I wanted to work in long-term as an SLPA. But yeah, look at those things and see how much support you're going to be getting from the school and then also from the supervisor. That's another big thing. I've run into many individuals who find themselves in the position where the supervisor assumed the school or training program would take care of something. And then vice versa, the school kind of assumes that, oh, well, the supervising SLP at the practicum site will pick up the slack in this area. And then the SLPA is caught in the middle. Mm-hmm. And so making sure that that communication between those two parties is really strong and the understanding of what's expected of you is very clear is very, very critical to having a successful SLPA training experience, because that's ultimately going to influence the professional that you are and have direct impact on those outcomes.
Sounds like you've just got wonderful years of experience.
It's been awesome. I was recently on an episode touching on advocacy, and one of the things, topic threads that we covered in that episode was really going after it as an SLPA. I'm of the mindset, whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to be the best at it or attempt to be the best at it. I may not totally hit the mark, but if I, you know, can try my hardest to do it, I'm going to do that. And I think that I've met so many individuals in the speech field who have that same drive. We want to do the best for the consumer and their families. And that's why professional development is such a big part of our field. And for me too, there's a personal side of it. Our eldest has multiple disabilities and has been a participant in special education since the start of his school career. And so I have that perspective too as a parent. And I'm always thinking to myself, am I fulfilling him? And am I being the professional that I would hope that my son encounters in his mm-hmm. lifetime? And I think that I've met so many professionals in the speech field who maybe they don't have a child, but maybe they have a neighbor or a family member in their life where there was something that sparked this interest in coming into this field. And I ask everyone, go back there. What sparked you, you know, to enter? Mm-hmm. And just always be thinking that I want to be that professional that fulfills that spark and that, you know, inspiration in me. So I've really enjoyed being an SLPA. It's given me a lot of wonderful opportunities by being part of our state association. I've had the opportunity to attend legislative days and visit our state capitol and, you know, start conversations and relationships with legislators who have, you know, we would hope have a vested interest in the field. And I've also had the opportunity to complete extra trainings and clinical opportunities. I was fortunate years ago to complete the social thinking clinical training. Social thinking is a methodology that serves social and pragmatic development across the lifespan, really. And in, when you're talking about K-12, those ages, and but again, it serves a lifespan. So, you know, individuals serving adults also use this methodology. But in the schools, it's heavily used and in private clinics. And Michelle Garcia Winter was the creator and still is, you know, the CEO of that company. And so having those opportunities and applying for those trainings and just, again, it just furthers my clinical skill set. And I not only want to be the best to the consumer or the client, but also the SLP whose caseload I'm helping to serve. And I want to, I think of myself sometimes as a Swiss Army knife, you know, like, okay, if I have these different facets to my clinical skills, there's going to be less time in, you know, maybe my supervisor having to explain the basics to me, and we can get, you know, right into the meat and potatoes of the clinical treatment.
I am sure your SLP supervisor so appreciates that.
It's definitely a mutual beneficial relationship. There's so much that we gain from each other.
Good. Well, and that's the way it should be. SLPs, SLPAs, we should really play well in the sandbox together and complement and help one another.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Thank you for your time today. Remind us once again of your website and your podcast.
So it's slpa.resources. You can find us on Instagram. And then I also have a page dedicated to all things speech. And you can find me on Instagram. My handle is at speaking right from the heart. And right is spelled like my last name, W-R-I-G-H-T. But again, I'm a contributor and host on the slpa.resources podcast as well.
Well, all of these contacts will be on our fresh SLP podcast page, and we will include them in our show notes. So thanks again for your time today, Selena.
Thank you for having me.
Today's conversation has created some aha moments for you and motivated you to become a better SLP, continuing to connect some of those missing links between what you know and how to use that knowledge. Thank you for downloading the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, I'd love you to subscribe, rate it, and leave a short review. Also, please share an episode with a friend. Together, we can raise awareness and help more SLPs find and connect those missing links and get the information needed to help them feel confident in their patient care every step of the way. Follow me on Instagram and join the Fresh SLP community on Facebook. Show notes are always available, so come learn more at freshslp.com. Let's make those connections. You got this.